This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, it's the Hockey News Podcast. I'm Matt Larkin here with the usual cronies, Ken Campbell, Ryan Kennedy. And you know, it's that time of year where the speculation is over, the rumor mongering is over, the trade deadline is passed. It's time to just talk hockey. It's time to talk the home stretch, what's going to happen, and let's look at the standings. And you know, it's funny, somehow we've managed to pre-curse the Washington Capitals. Yep. I don't want to give anything away, but you know, we're getting ready to publish our playoff preview edition. We're discussing the Capitals, even just mentioning them as a Stanley Cup contender. All of a sudden, they've lost four games in a row, and yep, here we go again. So what do you guys think? Tell me what you think about the Capitals right now. Should we be worried about this four-game losing streak? Or is it almost a good sign because things are happening differently this year? What do you think?
I think we should be worried. There's my Diet Coke. I think we should be worried because, and I'll tell you why. Because the Washington Capitals have got to make believers out of people at some point. And they always give you a reason to not believe in them. And that's what they're doing right now. And I have a lot more confidence in them if they were rolling through. And you know, like to me, it's just, it's a bad time to have a slump, and I blame the bye week for this. They're 5-6-1 since their bye week. They were 17-2-1 going into their bye week, and they're 5-6-1 since their bye week. I know they're bored. I know they're, you know, but you know what? You can't let your foot off the gas. I mean, and the reason why they should be concerned is if Pittsburgh passes them, that's a major disadvantage they're putting themselves at. Like, they worked so hard through three quarters of the year to get a home ice advantage through the playoffs, not just through the Eastern Conference Final, through the playoffs, and now they're on the verge of putting that in the shitter because Pittsburgh. Like, if Pittsburgh wins tonight, they're ahead of them.
Yeah. Right? And if Columbus gets hot, then Washington could end up playing Pittsburgh in the first round. Oh, my God.
I'm going to take a more positive tack and say that I like the adversity that they're facing right now because I think it'll focus them, assuming they can pull out of this mini tailspin, I think it'll focus them for the playoffs. Having just recently spoken to Carl Elsner, he was very excited for the playoffs in a sort of like, can't wait to get there kind of way. I feel like having to refocus in the regular season to buckle down and say, okay, boys, like, we got to win some games here, you know, for positioning as it would be, where they didn't have to do that a week or two ago. I think if they can pull off that, I think it really helps. And, you know, guys are going through slumps. Ovechkin hasn't been scoring many goals lately. But we know once we get to the playoffs, he's going to have some goals.
Why do we know that? He's gone 18 games without an even strength goal.
Sure.
Like 18 games. And you know,
but how often does that happen to Alex Ovechkin?
He's getting his shots. He had 9 shots against Dallas the other night, and he had like 12 shot attempts the other night in one of the games. So, like, it's not like he's not getting his chances.
That, to me, that's a good sign. To me, that means there's a positive regression
it's
coming. If he's getting
bad
his shots.
Puck luck.
And speaking of positive regression and numbers, I'm going to stick with the computer boys, as they call them in Florida, on this one. And what to me was interesting about the Washington team this year that we didn't see in all these other years, or most of the other years when they were dominant in the regular season, is the analytics support them this time. You look at the scoring venue, zone-adjusted Corsi, all that stuff. They actually look really good on paper in that category, whereas they didn't last year. Last year, that was the sign of the fall to come, that they graded out as pretty average. But they don't this year, so I'm going to trust the numbers and say, hey, every team's due for a slump once in a while. I think they only have lost, 17 games all year? It's going to happen. And it stands out a lot right now because they just made their big trade deadline acquisition, Kevin Shattenkirk. They're supposed to be dominant team, who's suspended. So suddenly there's reason to panic, but I think we may look back on this slump a month from now and say, what? I don't even remember that.
Well, I'll tell you. Brooks Orpik was quoted today as saying, somebody asked him, you know, what do you have to do now to get out of this? And he said, we make hockey our first priority and focus a little better than we did on this trip. We don't need to elaborate. How does that sound? Sounds to me like they went to California and had a good time and forgot about playing hockey.
I don't know. To me, that sounds like he's just saying, you know what? Let's not make a mountain out of a molehill. Let's just shut it down. Let's just move on.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Another positive thing to remember is that they are the best defensive team in the entire NHL. A big part of that is having Braden Holtby in net. However, in the playoffs, they get to have Braden Holtby in net.
That's right.
So you look in, even if guys like Ovechkin are in a bit of a scoring slump, they can keep the puck out. And the playoffs, we know, tend to be more defensive than offensive, and I think that bodes very well for them.
Braden Holtby's got an .821 save percentage and a 5.01 goals against average in his last three starts.
Yeah, and that's a cherry
pick. And the Capitals have taken a ton of penalties, and they've given up a bunch of power play goals, and they've been terrible defensively. So, you know what? Okay, you guys are right.
You take your three-game sample. I'm going to go with the other 60-something.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. But you're asking me if we should be concerned. I think that we should be. That the Washington Capitals should absolutely be concerned about this. Because if four games turns into five games or six games, it's easy for this thing to go downhill. You know, and I think they've got a pretty good homestand coming. They're pretty good. They're deep. They're really good at home. So, I mean, they've got to stop this in their tracks. Like, is this going to be their undoing? Are they going to lose in the first round because of this? No. But should they be concerned? Absolutely. Especially when the Pittsburgh Penguins are 1 point behind you, and a month and a half ago, they were X number of points behind you.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of the concern-o-meter, which I just invented, apparently. That's right. What about on the western side of the bracket, the Edmonton Oilers? Oh, my God. It seemed like they finally were totally safe. And suddenly, it's, oh, there goes Calgary passing us in the standings. What do we do about Edmonton? Are they a team we should be worried about? Are they going to miss the playoffs? What do you guys think?
I don't think they will. I don't think they will. They're up 7 on Los Angeles right now for the last wild card spot, and the magic number is 19. They have 17 games, or no, they have 14 games left, and LA has 15 games left. Any combination of points gained by Edmonton and points lost by LA adding up to 19, and Edmonton's in. So I gotta think they're gonna pick up some wins here. In LA, it's just been, I'm sorry, I don't believe in those guys anymore. I just don't. You watch them play and you think there's games where, okay, they're going to start taking it seriously now. They're going to ramp it up, and they're going to get in, and they're going to cause some damage, and then they go three games where they look like they can't play anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't have a lot of faith in the Kings. So I think the others are going to make it.
The other thing that really helps Edmonton is they play Vancouver 3 more times and they play Colorado 2 more times.
Wow.
Yeah, so you get 5 games where you should get 8 to 10 points. Mm-hmm. So just right there, I think they're in very good shape. I think it would be hilarious to see people burn down the West Edmonton Mall should the Oilers, you know, completely fall apart, but it's not going to happen. I mean, Connor McDavid himself can win them several games. Cam Talbot can win them a game or two by himself. Mm-hmm. And I'm with you that I don't think Los Angeles at this point can put together such a run as to threaten the Oilers too seriously.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and I like the idea of looking at not just the Oilers, but the teams around them. It's a good point about the Kings. I think their style is starting to look a little antiquated. You know, they're sticking to the big wins, but the league, you know, we've seen it year after year. The league changes so fast. Big doesn't win right now. Speed wins right now. So I do think the Oilers are going to be safe. I think it's becoming increasingly clear that the Oilers are not going to go far, but we've talked about that before. I think they're going to get their lesson, you know, in their first year in the playoffs. Yeah. I think right now, especially
that's fine.
I don't know if it meant they should have gone for Kevin Shattenkirk or not, or tried or whatever, but I do think what you're going to see in a playoff series is right now the Oilers lack that Clydesdale defenseman, the 30-minute-a-night guy. They have a lot of guys with potential to become that, a Darnell Nurse, Oscar Klefbom, but I don't think they have that guy right now. I think that's going to expose them defensively in a playoff series, should they get to one.
Yeah. They'll get to it.
To paraphrase LeVon Helm in The Last Waltz, the playoffs are an adult dose. You go the first time, get your ass kicked, you heal up, you come back for more.
He didn't say that, did he?
He did. Really? Well, he didn't say it about the playoffs.
Yeah, I know.
He said it about New York City. But
close
enough. My point remains.
Okay, playoffs, New York City, potato.
Times Square is the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah.
Okay.
the Florida Panthers announcing today, it looks like Aaron Ekblad's going to be out for at least a week, up to 10 days, with concussion problems. Took a big hit, high hit on the weekend. We know last year he suffered concussion. He also had the one right before the World Cup this year. There's one this year, so that's three already within the span of just over a year. Personally, I'm scared when I see this. I'm always sensitive when it comes to concussions. I'm a concussion sufferer myself. I hate when guys get rushed back. And I'm starting to look at Ekblad, who's still a very, very young player. He's 2 years removed from his rookie season. And I'm starting to wonder if there's a risk that he's going to become an Eric Lindros. That's a lot of concussions sandwiched very close together. The Panthers are in a free fall already. And I'm wondering right now, should the Panthers consider thinking long-term, cutting their losses on this season, and do you shut down Aaron Ekblad? Because you don't want to risk second or third impact syndrome.
Right.
That's what happened to Sidney Crosby when his major problem started is because he suffered two concussions in a short-term period. So I think you got to look at Ekblad and say, this is our long-term baby. We must take care of him. Let's say goodbye to the season, or if we make it without him, then it's a bonus. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of merit to that. I think that, you know, I mean, as you said, I mean, the Panthers are awful right now. They've lost seven of their last eight, or, you know, I mean, they're just in a free fall, as you say. Yeah. So why would you not, you know, I mean, there's 3 weeks left in the season? Why would you not just shut them down and say, come back healthy next year? What concerns me about Aaron Ekblad, though, is like, Matt Hendricks and Gabriel Dumont were the two guys who put him out in his concussions. Like, are you kidding me? Like, come on. And there was no penalty. No penalty! No penalty. Like, not even a minor for...
Right, yeah, completely missed.
No nothing. Penalty?
Like, what's he supposed to do? Like, what's Aaron Ekblad supposed to do? He's going in the corner to get the puck. Like, that's what scares me, because I talked to Eric Lindros a lot about this, and he told me, just when I talked to him, I don't know, a year ago, he said, you know, he admitted that he had major, major fears about carrying the puck up the middle of the ice. And it harmed his career irreparably, because he couldn't be the same player. He couldn't even come close to being the same player as he was. And I fear the same for a guy like Aaron Ekblad, that he's just going to get so many of these that he's never going to be the same. And these guys that are putting him out, like, please, like, seriously. Like, why are these guys not getting suspended? Why are they not getting penalized?
Well, Hendricks did get suspended.
Yeah, he got three games. But again, he got three games.
The penalty's not nearly long enough.
Three games.
It's not a deterrent. And it's something, I don't know if we're ever going to see it resolved. And, you know, I've studied this stuff a lot. I've asked a lot of people about it. And the problem is, and I've said it before, the victims and the perpetrators are on the same side, because the suspension rules are in the CBA. It's collectively bargained. So as much as you're going to want to see much stiffer penalties, which is the only way, you need to see more
way.
Of the Rafi Torres.
Gabriel,
41 games.
Gabriel Dumont has to get 15 games.
15
for that.
More.
Not two,
30.
Not three. 15 or 20 games.
Yeah.
Because he drove his shoulder into a guy's head.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a guy bending down. It wasn't a trajectory thing. It wasn't anything. It was a guy driving a shoulder into another guy's head.
And a marginal player like that, the possibility of missing 30 games, that would put the fear of God in a player like that,
mm-hmm.
who needs that money, right?
Mm.
But I just don't think it's going to happen, because the PA would not allow that. They don't want... There's a strange, contradictory relationship there when the PA is representing both sides of the crime when it comes to suspension. So it's just like, you know, Duncan Keith last year is the example I always draw from, where, you know, he got six games. It was the second longest suspension of the year. So relative to the rest of the league, it was a good suspension. But people were up in arms, understandably, because six games, that's nothing.
Yeah.
It's not going to stop Duncan Keith from slashing a guy again.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I agree on all points. I think you got to shut Ekblad down, especially the way Florida's playing. They're marginal playoff team at best. But you come back next year with a healthy Ekblad, healthy Huberto, healthy Barkov. All of a sudden, you've got something pretty nice going, and obviously they have other players as well. They're pretty talented, but I think you sort of cut this year off as a weird transition year where nothing really went your way.
And healthy Barkov, that's one that starts to scare me too, because Sasha Barkov, every time he gets to play for an extended stretch, healthily, 30-40 games, he starts to score like a frontline NHLer. I still think he's got amazing talent. He's going to be a star. but he's getting hurt every year now. That's 3 years in a row, right? That he's missed significant time. I don't know. Like, at what point do you start to call him injury-prone player? Mm-hmm. I think maybe now. That's a concern for the Panthers. Yeah, I think I just did. Stamped it, official. Here in Toronto, the Calder Trophy race is being just a constant discussion. It's been fun. Some people get upset about it, but I say, hey, it's exciting. You got Mitch Marner, you got Austin Matthews, you got Matt Murray having a great season. Of course, don't worry, Jets fans, we know Patrick Laine is awesome. It's all good. We know he's great. We have not forgotten about him.
Never.
And you have Zach Werenski in Columbus as well.
And you have Sebastian Aho in Carolina.
Yeah, exactly.
He's playing great.
20 goals.
Exactly.
Matthew Tkachuk has 32 assists.
He's been fantastic.
He's playing on their first line.
Matthew Tkachuk is funny. I did a blog
Matthew
the other
Tkachuk
week.
Is like, he's a beast.
Yeah, he's one of the best possession players in the NHL. Yeah, and I was saying, I did a blog the other week where it's like the Calder race is so good this year that Matthew Tkachuk has like no chance of winning it, even though most years he could win it out.
Right.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And now we have Austin Matthews in a mini slump. And I'm just curious because at least from what I've seen and, you know, talking to other sports writers and, you know, we're all voters. A lot of us are voters. It seems like we've been leaning as a group more commonly toward Matthews because compared to Laine, because he's got the more complete game. But at what point is it time to say, you know what, now Laine's got the upper hand because Matthews is not scoring enough? Do you guys think we've reached that juncture now?
I don't. He's still my rookie of the year. He's still my rookie of the year. And I'll tell you why. I keep track of stupid things. And
he really does.
And Austin Matthews has 12 first goals of the game. Huge. He's got 18 goals that have put the Leafs in the lead this year. That no other player in the league has that. Not Sidney Crosby, not Connor McDavid, not Evgeny Malkin, not Patrick Laine. Nobody. He's got 18. And Connor McDavid has 4 first goals and 8 goals that have put the Oilers in the lead. So 12. And that's how many first goals... You following me here? That's how many first goals Matthews has. He's been fabulous, and he's going through a bit of a slump, and it's to be expected. He's never played this much hockey in his whole life. I mean, he's never played this amount of hockey. He's never had this grueling, you know, and that maybe that's where playing junior hockey last year might have helped him over, say, playing in Switzerland. But I think he's hit a bit of a rut. I still think if all else is equal, which it is in this case, I believe, you go with the guy who you think is going to ultimately be the best player. And I think that's going to be Austin Matthews. So if it were today, he would still get my vote, no question.
Yeah, for me, it's still Matthews. I think the points are close enough that you have to look at all the other factors. And, you know, Matthews, if we're just looking at forwards right now, you know, because some people are even saying, oh, maybe Mitch Marner should be in the conversation to win it all. But
yes,
Matthews is the... He's the center versus two wingers in Laine and Marner. He has so much more responsibility. His line mates are not good at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I looked it up. Zach Hyman has the worst shooting percentage of any forward on the Leafs. 6.4%.
Yeah, Willie Nylander's.
Nylander, fair enough.
Connor Brown.
Yeah, but you know, Connor Brown, you know, another rookie. But yeah, Nylander, obviously a pretty good in his own right. Nylander's good.
Mark Scheifele. I mean,
yeah, Laine's playing with Scheifele.
Yeah,
and yeah, like if you put anybody other than Zach Hyman on that line, Matthews has 15 more assists.
Right
off the bat.
Right.
So
if he's playing with JVR.
Yeah, if he's playing with JVR or Komarov, put Leo Komarov in that spot. Another guy that works hard and can get first on the pucks in the offensive zone. But, you know, it's not the situation. That's fine. And Matthews is still producing. And even in the little slump, when I watch him play, I see a guy that picks off pucks from the opposition. He creates turnovers because he's got that great reach, and he's always on the puck, and his possession numbers are still great. So for me, that's like all the tiebreakers go to Matthews, even if you were just going on raw points. If I'm going to give Laine an out here, it's should he end the season with, say, 10 more goals or like 15 more points than Matthews, then all of a sudden you say, okay, well... You know,
by
that's a pretty
volume.
Big gulf.
Yeah,
by sheer
true,
volume,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
a pretty
yeah.
big gulf. Much in the same way that, like, you know, Nathan MacKinnon won on gross points his year. There was probably some vote splitting between Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat in Tampa Bay.
Right.
But I kind of compare it to that situation. But I still think it's Matthews' trophy to lose.
And I think we're going to just have to anger the city of Winnipeg on this one. Yes, because we are three Toronto writers, which is funny because we're national writers, by the way, everybody. We're based in Toronto. We do not cover the Leafs. Yeah. We do not cover the Leafs.
If Hockey News was based in Montreal, we wouldn't be three Montreal writers.
That's right.
It used to be.
And the strange thing is there's this perception of, oh my God, because Matthews is a Leaf, he's going to win a major award. When was the last time a Leaf won a major award? I don't count Alexander McGillney winning the Lady Bing. You go back to 92-93, Doug Gilmore. It's not like there's this huge bias among voters toward handing out awards to the Leafs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Matthews just happens to be really good. I like what you said, Ryan, about being on the puck all the time. To me, it reminds me of Pavel Datsyuk, the way he's constantly retrieving the puck, even after he loses it. And with Laine, listen, everyone, Laine is incredible. He's an amazing talent. He's going to be a superstar scorer. We're not discrediting him. But Mark Scheifele isn't just a pretty good number one center. Mark Scheifele is becoming a superstar.
Yeah. No, he's not. He's becoming a star. He's not becoming a superstar.
Becoming. I didn't say
no,
is.
He's not.
Let me speak
he's
a little
not
bit here,
be
okay,
a superstar.
Let me speak a little bit here, okay? Mark Scheifele is becoming, which means is not yet. But if you look at the last calendar year, top scorers in the league, right at the top of the list, you got Sidney Crosby, you got Patrick Kane, you got Connor McDavid, I believe, and Mark Scheifele is right up there at the top of the list. So it's just,
okay.
How can you not get 5-10 more goals added to your total if you're Laine just by virtue of playing with Mark Scheifele?
Yep.
You know?
But you have to be good enough to play with Mark Scheifele.
Yes.
You have to be good
enough. Yeah.
You have to be good enough to be able to convert those passes and to make the plays and to keep up with them. Couple of things I want to touch on about the awards thing. Do you guys realize the Leafs have never, ever in their history, ever had a Norris Trophy winner? Ever.
Woo!
Yeah.
Not one.
That's crazy.
That is crazy, eh?
And the streak will continue this year.
And secondly, I'm going back to this Mark Scheifele thing. So do you think Mark Scheifele is going to be a top three player in the NHL for a period of 5 years or more? Because that's my definition of a superstar.
I wouldn't rule it out yet. So you think there can only be three superstars in the league at one time?
No more than five.
Okay.
No more than five.
Name five. We'll try and name a six. Go.
Yeah.
Okay. Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
One.
Connor McDavid.
Two.
Carey Price.
Three.
Patrick Kane.
Yes.
Not Patrick Kane.
Yeah, Patrick Kane.
Okay.
Patrick Kane
is four.
Jonathan Taves?
No.
Really?
Not a superstar right now.
Really?
No. Doesn't produce enough offense to be a superstar.
Okay, that's okay. You got four.
That's about
it. Number five.
I'm saying no more than five.
Eric Carlson. So
yeah.
Ken Campbell says Brent Burns is not a superstar. Stamped it.
He's not yet because he's got to do it for a period. Like, you got to be, in my opinion, you've got to be a top five player in the league for a sustained period of time.
I think that's a good Hall of Fame credential. What about a Jenny Malkin who leads the NHL points per game?
Yeah. Okay, well, he's
so now we're past five or six. And then again, if you look at the last calendar year, who's produced at a superstar level? Mark Scheifele.
Yeah, but aren't you going to put Mark Scheifele in with those guys?
Not yet. But again, I said becoming. I didn't say is.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's in the conversation.
Okay.
He's playing that well.
Okay.
Right? He's becoming a frontline NHL center. It's a great debate, though. It really is.
Yeah, it's good.
We're going to go to some reader questions now. Got a few good ones. Ben Thielman at Ben Thielman 41 says, what do you think of the Flames given their recent play? Do they have a legitimate chance to go deep in the playoffs? Great question.
With those top two lines and that defense? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Dougie Hamilton might be the best defenseman in the NHL right now.
He's having a good year.
Oh, he's been terrific lately. He has been absolutely
terrific. I mean, I don't think he's
lately.
Brent Burns or Eric Carlson.
No, but I mean,
he's not a superstar.
I mean, in the last couple of weeks, he's been the best. He's been
outstanding.
And, you know, Michael Backlund is like...
Oh, he's...
Are you kidding me?
Selke candidate.
I was just going to say, is this guy going to win the Selke trophy?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he may very well win the Selke trophy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Gaudreau and Monahan are essentially second-line players right now.
Frolik, Tkachuk, Backlund line is like the analytics dream.
Yeah, the three M's line, they're possession monsters, and, I mean, they're so good for that Flames team. And it's kind of funny how they get underrated because we like the flash of Gaudreau, and then, of course, just in the division, you think about McDavid and the Oilers. But, I mean, in that you look at that division, and I don't have a ton of faith in Anaheim long-term.
Oh, I don't have any.
Yeah, so...
Flames to beat Anaheim in a playoff series, right?
I
can see that.
I can see them winning
Flames
around.
Way better.
Yeah.
They're way quicker, and...
I think the big question would be...
Way more skilled.
Could the Flames beat San Jose? That would be my question I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't think this year.
I wonder if San Jose wouldn't just say, okay, guys, it's classes in session.
Yeah.
And, we're the professor and you're the student. And this is what we're going to show you. This is how we're going
to
show you.
But Calgary going two rounds this year, I think, means a lot more than the last time when they went two rounds when they beat a Vancouver team that was clearly on the descent.
Right. And you know what's interesting about the team this year is, you know, Calgary was the poster child pretender team in analytics, right, under Bob Hartley. But Glenn Gulson, they're playing very good analytics hockey in terms of coursing possession. They're actually in the top third of the league now. So they have changed their team identity. And to me, the biggest question mark, of course, is goaltending there.
They toyed with Montreal the other night, eh?
They did.
Like, they just say it was just like...
And what's interesting is, who has a .946 save percentage in his last 10 games? Brian Elliott.
Yeah.
Elliott's back. I don't know what that means because Elliott's always...
Oh, your little five-game thing. I say Braden Holtby, he's got an .820 save percentage in his last three games.
10.
Oh, you pick your little...
10 versus 3. 10 versus 3.
And now I'll say... You say, oh, Brian Elliott has five games.
What's three
about
times 3.33?
What games this year?
So my example was 3.3333 times longer than yours. So boom. I still don't know what it means in the playoffs because Elliott, you know, he's struggled.
Yeah.
He hasn't been a money goalie in the playoffs, or at least hot cold.
Yeah.
But I still think they can win a series. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Next one. This guy's called Flurries 2 Assists at Tic Tac Burger Mac. Is his name
like
or her name?
I don't think that's his real name.
I feel like I want to go to that restaurant.
Me too. What's a Tic Tac Burger Mac?
Mac cheese
and Tic Tacs
on the burger.
Ooh, that sounds like something a hipster would make.
Yes.
Come on down to Portland, play pinball machine, and have a cheeseburger with Tic Tacs on it, and macaroni and cheese.
Yeah.
Fair trade coffee, wear a fedora, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
I don't know why your hipster is a surfer.
Yeah, I don't know either. Well, it's out west. Speaking of west, segue.
Wait! Okay.
Here's the question.
We're on the next question.
Who out west has a shot at a cup this year? The East seems stacked with contenders. I haven't heard much from the WC. Western Conference, sweaty mates.
WC in France is a water closet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's where you go for a pee.
But on the West Coast, it's also a popular rapper that did a lot of stuff with Ice Cube and Mac 10. The more you know.
Da-na-na-na.
Exactly.
What?
Dub C? Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Anyways.
Did he do dubstep?
No, that's based out of England.
Did he play in the dub?
He didn't play in the dub.
Did you double bubble?
He might have.
Did he play double trouble?
He's West Coast for
somebody
life.
Answer the question.
The answer is Chicago.
Chicago.
Yes.
Go. Wow.
Of course.
That was easy. Yeah.
That's right.
I mean,
no team's superstars or stars.
Bam two.
No team's top players play better in crucial situations than Chicago's. Mm-hmm. Not none.
Yes.
And did you notice they sat out Hjalmarsson and Oduya the other night? Just sat them out. Healthy scratch.
Why not?
Healthy scratch.
Recharge the batteries.
Stop playing.
Yeah,
we're just going to reach.
When you have
nobody
Ryan Campbell.
Like, Joel Quenneville, to me, is a coaching genius. Nobody has a better read on who's going on his team and who's playing well and who isn't and who needs a rest and who needs this than Joel Quenneville. I think that guy is, like, he is, in my opinion, and a lot of people are going to, he's like Scotty Bowman-esque.
Bill Belichick.
Like
NHL
he's
Bill Belichick,
in that conversation.
Mm. I don't think it's crazy to say
that. Yeah,
he's
going to
be
second
all time.
Yeah, and I think Chicago, I've already picked them to make the Western Conference or to make the Stanley Cup final.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're loaded this year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the way Chicago, when it comes to the postseason, they're just an unstoppable killing machine most years. And I mean, that vaunted core strikes again. And then, you know, when you have guys like Taves and Hossa and Kane and Keith, like, you just plunk guys in. You bring up kids like Nick Schmaltz and Ryan Hartman and whoever it happens to be, Tanner Kiro.
Yeah,
Ryan doesn't
Hartman
matter.
Got 15 goals.
Yeah, you can just bring in Richard Panik.
Yeah,
you put Panik on. Yeah, put him on the first line. Oh, that was a success too.
Yeah.
How do we do it?
Yeah.
But I mean, when you put players in a position to succeed, it makes it that much easier on them, and that's the luxury that Chicago has, is they've built this perfect system that veterans can be let go because of cap purposes, and they bring in young guys who are raring to fill in that spot.
Yeah, and Duncan Keith will play 30 minutes a game,
and he'll
by
be
the end
happy
of the Stanley Cup
so.
Finals, he'll look like a homeless person.
Yeah,
but he'll, you know, I mean,
If Duncan Keith plays less than 27 minutes in the playoffs, he's grumpy because he wants to be out there. He told me one time, he's like, I prefer playing games to practice. Practice is an hour. I'd rather play like the whole game, you know.
I think I'm with you guys. And a great example of Quenneville knowing who's going and who's not. It's like look at Nick Schmaltz's arc this year. Yeah. Made the team, sent down. All of a sudden he's back up and he's part of what's been the hottest line in the league for the last month with Taves and Richard Panning, absolutely on fire. And it's interesting to me because obviously the Minnesota Wild are a threat. But I think Chicago's in their head. And, I mean, Hawks have beat them, what, three times in the calendar year? Yeah. And for upcoming issue, I was doing a story on Bruce Boudreau. I talked to several of the Wild players. And every time I brought up the standings in Chicago, they got very uncomfortable. They were quick to shut it down. They were, well, we don't want to talk about Chicago. Oh, we don't know we're going to play them yet. We're not looking at the standings. You know. And it was they were very jumping when it came to Chicago. And to me, it just seems like mentally there's a hurdle they can't get past right now. I don't see them conquering it yet.
I would not pick Minnesota in a series between Chicago and Minnesota right now. Not a chance.
No.
I'd pick Chicago in six, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Minnesota against most other teams, I'd pick Minnesota, but not against Chicago.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. All righty. We got one more reader question. It's from Tom Bonte at Tomb, or Tomby. Probably Tomby. 1410. It's who gets the last playoff spot in the East? We got that dogfight between the Leafs, the Islanders, Tampa Bay's in the mix now.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Me or him?
I'll go first.
Yeah, you go first because I always go first.
Yeah,
you go first.
I feel like it's gonna be Toronto, based on the fact that the Islanders have a lot of road games left and they're not very good on the road. But I've also learned never to say anything about the Islanders because anytime I predict what they're going to do, they do the opposite.
Yeah.
So it might end up being the Islanders.
Didn't we leave them out of the playoff preview the year they made the playoffs?
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
It's just like the hugest, like,
because the last day of the season, the Devils played their backup goalie. And Toronto and Montreal both lost or tied. Or
was that the Wade Dubilowicz?
Wade Dubilowicz, yeah, exactly.
Wade Dubilowicz, you mean?
Yeah.
Usually I'm the guy who screws up names.
Yeah, sounded like Don Cherry. Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it seems like the Leafs have the momentum right now, but there's my soft answer is Leafs or Islanders.
I'm going to go with the Islanders because of the quality of opponent at going down the stretch here. Leafs' last four games they're all at home, but they're against Washington, Tampa Bay, Pittsburgh, and Columbus. They got two games left against Columbus. They're on a two-game Florida swing right now. Whereas the Islanders have their next two games are against Carolina, so they should win both of those games. Then they got Winnipeg. They got Philly down the stretch. Their last couple of games, they're on the road, but it's Buffalo, Nashville, Carolina, New Jersey. And then Ottawa at home for
not
the final
quite a murderer's
game. I think that the Islanders have a far better schedule than the Leafs do.
Now what about so interesting? No respect for Tampa Bay in the discussion. They're 3 points out.
Although they're coming on,
but they're kind of coming on. And what Stamkos
and
is not that far
Stamkos
off.
They're still
arguably the most talented team of the three in question. There, I don't know. And they get to play.
They got three centers injured right now. I just worry that like they're running out of real estate.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a nice run, but there's too many points up for grabs elsewhere that I feel like they could be like done this week if things go. I think they have the Rangers.
Well, they play the Rangers tonight and Ottawa tomorrow night.
Yeah, so back to back Rangers and Ottawa.
I'll be at that game.
Oh, there you go. Hey yo.
Yeah, if Tampa loses both those games, like that's it for them. Because I'm pretty sure the Leafs and Islanders have a game or two in hand on them too.
I forget. I should have the standings in front of me, but I never do.
There was some sort of magic box.
Why don't you prepare a little bit?
I don't know. I like to just wing it, bro. You know, there's that hipster voice again.
Matt doesn't know what a hipster is.
I don't.
He writes.
I'm proud that I don't know.
Where did you go last week?
I went on a vacation.
You didn't get a tan.
Oh, I never tan.
You don't.
First thing people say to me when I'm back is, "You're not tanned. You're not tanned."
You would strike me like people who haven't seen Matt Larkin in the flesh. You would strike me as a guy who would tan pretty well.
No, I'm usually accused of being a guy that burns, and I guess I did in the past. So now I this is great. This is so interesting to the readers. I'm sorry, everybody. blah blah blah. Something something sunscreen. I don't tan.
something something time.
Man, I'm trying to do you a favor by skipping to the end because I know you don't want to hear about this. But yeah, I was in the Caribbean. Okay, it was great, great food. It's time for Was He a Ranger?
Okay. Yes.
All right.
Yes.
I need to start with my uninspired pick, John Druce.
John Druce.
Yes.
Yeah. I can picture
yes,
that.
He was a Ranger.
Boom! Not a Ranger.
Oh, nice.
He just felt like he would be, though, right?
Yeah.
I thought so, too.
Yeah.
I'll admit I just didn't really care.
I've never been so disappointed in myself for
and a quick answer, too.
Yeah, that was bad.
Okay. That was her mentality. I was like, he was in Washington, but he could have been.
Lee Fogelin.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to say yes on that because I know he played for the Oilers. And if you play for the Oilers, you must also play for the Rangers at some point.
Okay.
That's my flawed logic.
On this episode of Deconstructing Ken, I'm going to say that Ken is going to... He's picked such an obscure name thinking, hey, we haven't thought about Lee Fogelin for so long. Ken probably only brought him up because he was a Ranger. And I think that's the trick, and he was not a Ranger.
Wow.
And
you are like the guy in The Princess Bride. It's like it's
inconceivable.
It's unbelievable how you like deconstruct everything.
I'm also not left-handed.
Anyhow, he was not a Ranger. And it could have even been a trick question because his father wasn't a Ranger either. His father played in the NHL, nor was he a Ranger.
That's not true. I don't think that's a trick question.
True story, bro.
Yeah.
No, but if his father had been a Ranger, I could have said, yeah, he was a Ranger.
But if we're going to deconstruct this whole panel, Matt and I are barely old enough to remember Lee Fogelin in the first place, let alone his father, who may or may not have played in the NHL.
Well, I don't remember him. Aren't you guys students
of
the game?
Yeah.
Do you watch hockey, bro? How much hockey do you watch?
Do you even watch Fogelin's,
bro? Did you ever play? Like, if you didn't play, you don't know what you're talking about.
All right, it's time for us to go watch some hockey and
wait,
not play it.
Ranger.
Oh, wait. Just kidding, everybody. You passed my test.
Disrespect. All right, so he's been in the news lately. Fetid in Florida. So got me thinking, Olli Jokinen, was he a Ranger?
Ooh. Oh, he was. Was a Ranger.
I think so too. I'm gonna. I think.
Yeah.
Wow.
Traded to the Rangers. I forget what the was it. Was it a trade involving Chris Higgins or something? I forget. But he was a Ranger.
Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna go with you. Yeah.
For one season.
Yeah.
Olli Jokinen was a Ranger. Well done.
Oh yeah.
So Matt wins.
Yeah.
I win again. I think I think I'm the all-time leader.
You might.
Pretty sure.
I generally lose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Huh.
All right. Well. Maybe next week we'll have some readers send in some Rangers, and keep listening. Thanks, guys.